WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is Farley Mowat. He's a Canadian naturalist and author, best known for his book Never Cry Wolf, which was adapted into a film. It told the story of how he lived among the wolves of the North. His new book is about a woman who, like him, felt very close to wild animals. Woman in the Mists is the story of Diane Fossey, who spent close to 20 years in Central Africa studying the nearly extinct mountain gorilla. She became more attached to the gorillas than the typical relationship between scientist and subject allows, as I found out when I interviewed her in 1982.
When I look at a gorilla, I feel like I'm looking at the better half of myself. There's a gentle, regal, magnificent air about a gorilla that I have not seen in any other animal as yet. And, of course, when I went to the field at first in 1963 and saw my first free-living gorilla, I felt a very strong emotional attachment, and I knew that I'd have to go back and study them. I wanted to communicate with the gorillas, so it was essential that I learn their means of communication. So then I learned that I had to imitate their contentment vocalizations, and the most common of these is what I have termed the belch vocalization. And that's a very soothing and I could see that this was really the ticket to my entry into gorilla land. So I've been belching ever since. And I'm afraid I've taken to liking it so much that even in society, if I'm stumped to the answer of a question or if I disagree mildly with something, instead of giving a retort, I just go, "Mom." It'd be a wonderful world if all of us went around doing that when we were going to have a squabble with someone.
Over the years, Diane Fossey became more and more concerned with the mountain gorilla's survival. She spent less time studying and observing their behavior and more time protecting them from poachers. Her attacks against poachers created enemies in Rwanda, where she worked. In the scientific community, she was accused by some of having lost her objectivity. She was murdered in 1985. Although a man was convicted in absentia of the murder, controversy still surrounds the case. Farley Mowat told me that when he was first asked to write about Diane Fossey, all he knew about her was her bad reputation.
I wasn't really very interested in Diane's story. I knew about her rather vaguely and had formed a rather negative opinion about her because, you know, all of the press, or almost all the press she got, was in a sense derogatory. So when Warner Books asked me if I'd be interested in doing the book, I said no at first, and then I read a couple of old copies of the National Geo, in which she had written herself articles, and I thought to myself, well, even if I don't like her very much, I like what she's done. So I started on that assumption, and then everything changed, of course, when I got access to her archives, her documents and her journals and things like that, and gradually the real woman began to emerge.
There's some connection I can see between you and her. You've both spent a lot of time with animals, and both have developed relations, you know, like some kind of communication relationship with animals. Did you see yourself reflected in her story?
No, I think she and I belong to almost a new genre of people. We don't conceive of ourselves or think of ourselves as being separate entities from the rest of animate creation. She, although she never did this consciously, subconsciously, she thought of herself as an animal. She thought of the rest of human beings as other animals, and she thought of the gorillas as being animals. She thought of us as part of a unity. And I have always thought that and felt that, too.
As she got closer to the gorillas and as she was able to communicate with them, she had a reputation for becoming more and more difficult to work with and for becoming more removed from people. You interviewed a lot of people who worked with her. What were some of the stories that you were told about how she was, what she was like to work with?
Depending on who you talk to. If you talk to the people who didn't like her, they were vitriolic. They retailed the most horrendous stories about her as a racist, as a sadist, as an alcoholic, as a nymphomaniac, you name it. The people that you didn't hear from, that the press has never heard from, were the ordinary people that she knew. And they, without exception, or with almost an exception, loved her and admired her enormously.
Diane Fossey became obsessed with poachers. with people who killed gorillas for profit or for trade. Why was she so obsessed with them?
Well, because they were killing the gorillas, and without some restraint being brought to bear on them, there would be no more gorillas. She understood this within a year of the time she'd arrived in the Virungas, and she didn't set out with a clear-cut plan of how it would be handled. In fact, in the initial stages, until the death, the murder, of one of her favorite gorillas, called Digit, she was quite pacifistic. She tried sort of gentle reason. But after the death of Digit, something seemed to happen to her. She understood, I think, that she would have to fight fire with fire.
How did she go after the poachers?
Well, she recruited her own rangers, and she would send them out to search for and cut and destroy snares and traps. If they found poachers in the act, they arrested them illegally, because she had no authority to do this, and brought them back to Diane. Diane would then attempt to persuade them that they'd better give up poaching. It didn't pay. There was one momentous occasion where she, a notorious poacher who had killed several gorillas and always got away, always escaped, her men captured and brought him in, and she beat him with long thistles. This is very painful, but not seriously damaging. And this turned some of the scientific crowd against her with a vengeance, but they didn't realize, or didn't care to realize, that this was exactly the treatment that was meted out to poachers by the Rwandan authorities. She was not overstepping any marks at all, as far as Rwanda was concerned.
You didn't set out in your book to solve the mystery of her murder, but you do have a theory about it. Now, the theories were that she was murdered either by a poacher seeking revenge, or by a boyfriend, a former boyfriend, or by a couple of people who worked with her in the camp. And two of the people who had worked with her were charged with the murder. One of them committed suicide. One of them fled to America.
The murder, as you know, was committed with a panga, like a machete. Sometimes in the early hours of the morning, somebody entered the cabin. Somebody who knew the cabin inside out. It seems apparent in retrospect, when one examines this, that this was an attempt to make it look like an act of revenge by the poachers. Everything was set up. But the difficulty was that, you know, the poachers had had 18 years to take revenge on her, physical revenge, if they had wanted to, and there had never been any attempt at this. Also, if a poacher was going to do it, he wouldn't try to break into the camp. He would have caught her when she was out in the forest. One poisoned arrow would have done it. Nobody could have ever traced it. So this seemed unlikely. But when you stop and analyze the whole thing, it becomes perfectly obvious who did it and why they did it. The individual will always remain anonymous. The people who really wanted her out were the people who were exploiting the gorillas as a tourist attraction. This had become very big business. About a fifth of the income into Rwanda was tied up with people coming from all over the world, Japan, North America, everywhere, to view the gorillas. And when you stand in the way of big business, threats are not much good. Something else is probably going to happen. When it became known that she was going to be allowed to stay in Rwanda as long as she wanted, there was really no alternative, as the proponents of the massive tourism exploitation saw it, but to eliminate her.
I want to ask you about something that you wrote at the beginning of your book. You wrote that with all the research that you did, that Diane Fossey had become as achingly familiar to you as if you were both of one blood. You wish that you were. What do you mean?
I meant that I came to admire her so much, not just for what she had done. I had that admiration in the beginning, but for her indomitability, her courage, her absolute dedication to a purpose. And I also began to feel so sorry for her in the sense of what she lost in the process of defending the gorillas. She became isolated from humanity to a very strong degree, not through any wish of hers, but because she was being rejected. She was becoming paranoid, there's no question about it. But as I always feel about paranoia, there's usually a reason for it, and in her case there was. So I began to see her as an underdog, as somebody who had been treated atrociously by her own kind. And that, I always have a passion for supporting the underdog, or the underwolf, whatever it may be. And that certainly led to a greater empathy on my part.
Thanks for talking with us about Diane Fossey.
My pleasure.
Farley Mowat spoke to us from the CBC studios in Toronto. His biography of Diane Fossey is called Woman in the Mists.